This is Lori Janik. Welcome to the Legal Affairs Podcast Series with your host, Finley P. Maxson.
Welcome to the NAR Legal November Podcast. This month, we are going to speak with Barbara Holland, president of H&L Realty Management in Las Vegas, Nevada, about the Institute for Real Estate Management's, or IREM's, new course, Managing Single-Family Homes and Small Investment Properties. In addition to being an IREM member, Barbara participated in the course, and she is also an IREM instructor. Welcome to the podcast, Barbara.
Thank you, sir.
Can you give us background into why IREM developed this course?
The primary reason was the economy. More and more real estate licensees are jumping into single-family management because management fees represent or can represent steady income. Income that real estate licensees can receive in between waiting for escrows to close or waiting for banks to agree to short sales. In addition, there has been an alarming number of complaints that have been filed with real estate divisions throughout the United States, often over rent money and security deposits. And often, the broker of these real estate companies have no idea what the real estate licensees have done or not done. Many states have very specific requirements as to maintaining separate accounts for property management. And this leads to some of the problems that are common mistakes that real estate licensees commit, areas pertaining to evictions, removal of personal property, security deposit refund requirements, housing code and maintenance requirements, as well as fair housing. These problem areas are happening because the licensee is unfamiliar with landlord, tenant, and eviction laws. Now, some states even require specific property management licenses or permits, including the broker of record, in order for any licensee within that company to conduct property management. And I think the other major impact is that bank foreclosures and their relationships with a real estate licensee who knows how to market and sell the homes but are not involved in property management are absolutely being asked by the banks to represent them as property managers for their homes.
Okay, well, what are the main topic areas covered by the course, and can you give us a description of each area?
Certainly. Number one, I'm truly amazed about phone calls that I have received over the years where some real estate licensee in my community asks me to send them a copy of my management agreement so they can use it at their office. There have been a number of complaints to real estate divisions that have developed where the two parties do not even have a written agreement, often between friends. And then some event occurs where the broker and the licensee are then sued. So the management agreement section lists the obligations of both parties. What actions can or cannot be done without written approval by the client? What happens when there's not enough money in the account and you have bills to pay? What kind of insurance is required by both parties? What are the terms and conditions as to the lease agreements that will be written? Who pays for the advertising? Who approves the tenants? These questions and others are answered in a very orderly presentation of the covenants of the management agreement. And that leads us to the next topic, which it pertains to ethical management and legal concerns. Questions like, does your state law require you to tell a prospective tenant that someone was shot in the house and was killed? What do you do when your client wants to paint over the mold or has his technician paint over the mold? Qualifying tenants and avoiding fair housing issues can be a difficult challenge because of personal prejudices of both possibly your staff as well as the property owner. One of the things that we try to show is that well-written lease agreements can help to mitigate legal problems as well as potential lawsuits. Many management companies have very specific addendums to the lease agreements as a result of many court cases in the United States, from mold to bugs, including bed bugs. And bed bugs now have become the new mold of litigation. Smoke alarm addendums, drug addendums, just to name a few. And these are things that need to be included in your lease agreements so that both you and the owner are going to be protected, and that will help avoid some of the ethical and legal challenges that in our particular society today where people sue, and they have many attorneys that are ready there to help them sue a real estate licensee as far as property management. This leads then to risk management in the next section of the seminar. And one of the things in this risk management, which relates back to the previous topic, is that well-written leases and proper documentation can make the difference in the success or failure of a lawsuit. when we enter into this risk assessment and insurance coverage section, the number one recommendation to anyone who manages property, no matter how large or small, your company should be named as additional insured. If not, you're going to have a problem before you even sign the contract. The section of the seminar provides a good summary of the types of insurance that are available to both the property manager or the real estate licensee and his or her company, as well as the insurance that's needed for the owner. From a comprehensive insurance policy that covers liability to property damages to specific renter's policy. In addition, you want loss of income. That's an important covenant in an insurance policy that is needed in case of a major fire that causes substantial damages to the home in which the tenant has to vacate from the home. As far as the licensee is involved, professional liability insurance for managing property is different from professional liability that you can obtain within sales. And at one time, when life was simpler, you had theft coverage to protect you from an employee or licensee embezzlement. Now you have to consider adding to your insurance policy cyber and computer insurance, especially if you are able to develop a single-family management or a small management portfolio that begins to expand, in which you will then have an assistant to work with you. Insurance policies help to transfer risk, and so it's very important to understand what is covered and what is not covered. And this section of the seminar also discusses specific policies and procedures of how to reduce risk, often by implementing preventive maintenance programs, which then, in a very orderly fashion, leads you to the next topic in the seminar, which is maintenance at the property. Unlike a traditional apartment community with on-site staff to maintain the property, think about it. My on-site management can respond quickly to maintenance requests, maintenance emergencies, in a very cost-effective manner. Maintaining single-family homes or small rental properties, such as fourplexes, can be a major challenge for the real estate licensee as well as the owner. You don't have the same economy of scales for purchasing products or services. So this section deals with these challenges and provides a variety of alternatives in handling maintenance issues and problems. Whether or not you want to consider having your own maintenance technicians to outsourcing to independent contractors. Now, the section also ties in with the insurance section, as real estate licensees, property managers, need to make sure that they and their clients are protected. Does the maintenance company or the sole proprietor have liability insurance or workers' compensation? What should you include in a service contract? And finally, how to present costly capital improvements that your client needs for their homes, which affect their bottom lines? Replacing a roof is a perfect example. This then brings us to the next topic, which is the finances, financial budgeting, and other tools. So the first question you have to ask is, what type of information does your client need? How detailed or sophisticated should the monthly financial report be? You can imagine what my financial report would look like of an 800-unit community versus a single family. They're very different. Do your state laws require certain accounting procedures, accrual versus cash basis? Nowadays, can you email your financial reports, and yet you have clients that still want hard copies to be mailed to them? At what point in time would you prepare a formal budget? There are some companies that will definitely create a formal budget for a single family, and other companies that will not unless you have at least a fourplex. Do you have multiple properties in a single trust account? This is a big issue. It goes back to the ethical and legal challenges. You have to make sure that no subaccount is in the negative. Otherwise, you'd be in violation of state laws as far as commingling. How do you process invoices? When do you file eviction notices? That becomes a very important issue when you serve an eviction notice to a person in a single-family home. Who inspects the maintenance work prior to payment? Another area where you can be sued by a client. What role does your client play in approving bills? How can you reduce operating expenses without reducing services or allowing the home to deteriorate? You know, what kind of investments, such as energy or water conservation, can you implement in a single-family home or in a fourplex that will help reduce the operating expenses for the owner, but potentially could also reduce the housing expenses for the residents that would give you a marketing edge? Now, that leads you then to the final topic of marketing and leasing. This should be the most familiar topic for most of the real estate licensees whose primary businesses have been listing and the selling of homes. some of the same fundamentals, knowing your product, knowing your neighborhood, your community, your competition, are just as important in leasing a home as it is in selling a home. How do you determine the rent, any other type of fees and security deposits? What advertising media will work for you, whether it be a newspaper or what I call the target market magazines that you find at grocery stores and 7-Elevens, internet sites, Facebook, flyers, banners, and signs where they're allowed. How do you market homes that are located in homeowner associations that have some very specific requirements? Finance, budgeting, maintenance all have a role in marketing the property. Can we afford to make certain changes that will increase the attractiveness of the home and make it more marketable, from installing tiles opposed to vinyl flooring, high-tech refrigerators, microwaves, internal security systems, painting the exterior? And yet, when we talk about marketing and leasing, many of the phone calls that I make from signage when I am shopping the competition, I don't even receive a call back. Or if I do receive a call, that person on the other end often doesn't even have a clue about the property. There are definitely some basics in the leasing and marketing of homes that the licensee will need, because in a single-family home, one vacancy represents 100% loss of income. So you can see all of these sections build for the student a foundation of property management, and also shows how all of these topics are interrelated in the field of property management.
That's great. That's very interesting. What should be the expectation for a student who successfully completes this course?
I hope that there'll be a better understanding that property management is complex and that there are many pitfalls. Details and being a detailed person is extremely important, as you have to balance so many issues in the air at the same time. You're dealing with an owner's livelihood. In some cases, that cash flow actually supplements an owner's livelihood, and you're dealing with an investment. In sales, we sell a home, and then for the most part, the sales real estate licensee may or may not have any further contact with that particular homeowner. But that's not the case in property management. If we have a client, we're with that client and for a long periods of time, and there are a lot of issues that can happen that create conflict. For the student who wants to become involved in property management, or even for the more experienced property manager or real estate licensee, you will definitely pick up pointers that will help them to become more successful. You will find at the end of the course excellent resource materials as far as forms, contracts that will assist both the experienced and non-experienced real estate licensee who's involved in property management.
So if a listener is interested in learning more about this course, what should they do?
Well, they'll eventually want to contact the local IREM chapters or even their local realtor associations that may be sponsoring this seminar, or they would need to contact IREM National's Educational Department for information of how to enroll either in a class or on an online course. This new course will be titled Managing Single-Family Homes and Small Investment Properties. Both IREM and NAR are in the final stages of packaging this new seminar for the real estate licensee. So it should be out, I would think, very close to January 1, 2012.
That's great. That's very helpful. I'd like to also mention that the IREM course will be discussed at NAR's annual convention in Anaheim, California, during NAR's Risk Management Committee meeting. The committee will meet at the Anaheim Convention Center in room 303, CD, Level 3, Entrance C at 3 p.m. on Friday, November 11th. We'd also like to remind our audience that this podcast was recorded on November 2nd, 2011. Information provided in the podcast may no longer be current, and listeners should confirm independently its accuracy.